And here we go. Man, Donald Trump is getting hammered. Have you noticed? Left, right, right, left, and everything in between as people watch and ask, what happened to this guy? His Ukraine policy changes day by day. His Gaza perspective seems almost as bad as Biden's. And leaders around the world are starting to wonder, is he okay? There's one world leader, though, who is absolutely loving Donald Trump. Bibi Netanyahu has been given the keys to the kingdom in the United States, and he is taking charge, of course, at America's expense. We're going to give you these stories, and we're going to give him the Sanchez effect. So let's do this. Hi, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez. And I want to start today with what is looking more and more like a basic lack of comprehension on the part of the Trump administration. It's almost as if they simply don't understand what's going on, nor do they have even the slightest historical perspective of things. Listen to this question. The president is asked by a reporter about putting peacekeeping troops in Ukraine.
Sir, do you support stationing European peacekeeping troops in Ukraine as part of this peace deal?
Now, I'm not the smartest guy in the world, but I'm going to stop right now and I'm going to give you the right answer to that question. The right answer is no, absolutely not. We're not going to put peacekeeping troops in Ukraine. That would only inflame the situation. You have to understand, young lady, that the reason the Russians went into Ukraine in the first place is because they felt threatened by NATO's presence. By soldiers. They were moving troops in there. They were putting in military hardware. They were even doing military exercises off of Russia's beaches. I could show you the video. So that is the answer from anyone, even with the most remote understanding of the conflict in Ukraine. But listen to what the president says instead.
If they want to do that, that's great. I'm all for it. If they want to do that, I think that'd be fine. I mean, I know France has mentioned it. Others have mentioned it. UK has mentioned it. But if we have a peace deal, I think having troops over there from the standpoint of Europe, we won't have to put any over there because, you know, we're very far away. But having troops over there would be fine.
No, it would not be fine. It would not be fine. French and British troops in Ukraine? Seriously? Ugh. The presence of the French and British is the very reason this thing started. How does my president not know that? How does he not know that? Then again, it could be President Putin's fault. Yeah, President Putin. Or wait, President Putin's translator. How many conversations have these guys had already? And still, Mr. Trump doesn't understand the most basic principle of what actually provoked Russia to go into Ukraine in the first place? Yeah, it makes you wonder. Makes you wonder if maybe Secretary of State Rubio doesn't know this. How about the envoys, Kellogg and Witkoff? Do they know anything about this conflict? Do they know anything about what started it? I mean, based on what they say and do so far, the answer seems to be no, they don't. So then we have to ask, how's that possible, right? I mean, is that what happens when you only listen to war profiteers who come into your office every day trying to sell more weapons? Or you watch CNN all day? Is that what happens? You don't know anything? I mean, here's the thing with these guys. You can't solve physics or trigonometry if you only know basic math. And these guys, it seems, can barely do arithmetic. You know, it's important to note that cluelessness is not confined to America these days. Germany's chancellor, Friedrich Merz, is constantly being told by his own citizens to stop throwing their money away on foreign wars that have nothing to do with them. And they're talking mostly about Ukraine. But he doesn't get it either. He was told this, by the way, to his face in Parliament. Watch.
Your word is worth nothing, even if it is written in black and white in your meager coalition agreement. You are a paper chancellor who plays superpower abroad, but at home allows yourself to be led around at will by the election loser, SPD. When push comes to shove, you let yourself brazenly, cheekily claim there's no money. In the same breath, you offer to the U.S. president to buy American weapons for Ukraine with a German taxpayer's money. I personally believe you already have your next supervisory board position established as a lobbyist, Mr. Mertz.
Ouch. In fact, Mertz recently was quoted as saying that figuring out what to do in Ukraine is simply too mentally exhausting for him. Exhausting, yes, so is algebra. Now, if Mr. Mertz opened his eyes and maybe watched this program, right, he would at least learn some things, like the fact that there are even people in Ukraine who are starting to disagree with him. Not in Germany, in Ukraine. Listen to what this Ukrainian member of parliament told me right here on this show that people are doing when they see Russian bombs hit their conscription centers.
When Russian army strikes the conscription points, Ukrainian citizens actually rejoice at that.
Really? Really? Did I just hear you right? When the Russian military hits the conscription points and hits would-be soldiers, people applaud in Ukraine?
Yes, exactly. I'm actually conveying a message from all the people in our country. Thank you for giving us hope that this terror may abate even for a little, for a while.
And there's more about what's going on in Ukraine. I don't know if you've heard about this. You've probably seen videos at some point of people in the streets that are roughed up, they're beat up, they're taken to the front lines. Well, there's more of those today. In fact, we've got some of those videos. Let me put those up for you so you can see them. So these are just people walking down the streets. They're just minding their own business. And these thugs jump out of a van, grab them, beat them, and then drag them into the van, sometimes unconscious. It's crazy to watch. And it happens every day, all the time. And every day, more and more videos are coming out. And that's why many Ukrainians are actually cheering the opposition. And then something else happened today that's maybe even more controversial as a result of this. Let me take you through it. Here's what's happened. We've just learned about this. It turns out that Ukrainian police have grabbed several men to take them to the front lines forcefully, but one of them was a Hungarian, and they killed him. According to reports that we have received, the Ukrainian recruiters beat the man with an iron rod after capturing him and then pushed him into a van and took him to the conscription center, where he died. The Hungarian government is not happy about this, and they have summoned their ambassador. Wow. So why are, then, I have to ask, Western leaders not seeing this kind of stuff? Why are they so uninformed when it comes to Ukraine? I don't mean they have to pick sides. I mean, just know the facts, right? Don't try to understand the geopolitics in general of this thing, at least. Well, I spoke to somebody who does understand this. He's been saying this for 3 years, and he happens to be a friend of mine. Listen to what U.S. Army retired Colonel Douglas McGregor told me here on my podcast.
You've got a lot of people in the West, in the Western elite circles, who are living in, the first half of the 20th century. In other words, when they look at the world, they don't see the world that exists. They see this fabricated illusion. And I think the biggest problem is that the banks in London and the city of London, along with the banks in New York City, the financial power they represent, they're really controlling the West. And they're really, this cabal is really governing us right now. They were virulently anti-Russian.
Yeah.
And they are furious, angry, and frustrated at the complete and utter failure of everything they did to try and destroy Russia.
So let's go back now to where we started this conversation about what's going on with Mr. Trump and his administration. Here's what's happening in America right now. The flip-flops on the JFK files, bad. The flip-flops on the Epstein files. The White House seeming to be owned by Israel and Netanyahu. All of this is making even the president's most loyal supporters want to look away in embarrassment. They're turning and turning hard against this president, even inferring that he's, and this is something he's not going to like, weak.
And I want to be clear, the headlines today, yesterday, they have been unequivocal to Trump, right? They have said, your base hates this, okay? MAGA is splitting over this Epstein thing, left, right, and center. All of the publications, literally.
She's right. There is no question that Mr. Trump, while once seen as a different kind of candidate from the rest, is now being seen by many who voted for him as just another politician controlled by outside forces. And he's not alone. Politicians in Western countries like France, the UK, and Germany are also seen as disconnected, or worse, just plain clueless. Alistair Crook is a former British diplomat, founder and director of the Beirut-based Conflicts for Him Forum. I have been wanting to have a conversation with him about these very topics, and he's good enough to join us. Thank you, Mr. Ambassador, for joining us, sir.
Always a pleasure.
What do you think of the fact that Bibi Netanyahu, in particular, walks into America, makes appointments, chooses who he's going to meet with, chooses who he's not going to meet with, and then is heralded as some conquering hero? What was going on in your head while you were watching those videos?
Netanyahu, for some years back, has been very clear. And he said, you know, it's very easy to manipulate the United States. It's not difficult. And I know how to do it. And I'm the person who can do it the best. So he's always made that claim. It's not just manipulation. Of course, huge sums of money are involved. Huge sums of money passed to Congress and to people who are standing for election. I mean, elections in America is big business. Billions pass through, billions depend on it. So there's big money involved in this. So the donors, and from the days of JFK, of course, much of the Jewish, pro-Jewish groups in America, pro-Israeli groups in America, have been able to donate large sums of money to candidates of their choice. The congressman once told me he thought, you know, there's only about two or three of my colleagues here in Congress that don't have an APAC, that's a lobby member, part of their team in the office as a minder to keep sure that they stay on course and they do support. And those, of course, can be corralled by Netanyahu and can produce changes in American policy.
What do you think of the fact that Americans in general, I don't know if you've seen some of the polls that came out this last week, Americans in general are really getting angry about this. They're angry at Mr. Trump for the breaking his promises. And they're getting really angry at our obsession with Israel, like never seen before. In fact, they just did a poll the other day that showed that more Americans now sympathize with Palestinians than Israel, something that's never happened before in America. So what you have here, and this is what's interesting, what you have here is the people pulling in one direction, but the politicians, the powerful, the elites, the president, the Congress, the Senate, and his cabinet pulling in another direction. Americans don't want to welcome Bibi Netanyahu like he's the greatest guy in the world, but those people do. That seems dysfunctional, like I've never seen it before. What do you think?
I mean, this is well known. This is generally described as a deep state, whatever you mean by that, but which really is, if you like, a sort of coming together of the security intelligence states or functions or agencies together with big donors, with Hollywood, with Wall Street sometimes involved with it. And as I say, they have a big influence. Donors are crucial to elections. There's no doubt that, you know, what you see, I mean, it's very obvious, is that Trump has a coalition. He has a coalition of Israeli firsters on one hand, and he has the MAGA. When this war in Iran broke out on Friday the 13th of June, of course, most of the MAGA people I mean, the election, the American election, had two main issues: immigration and no more wars, no more forever wars, and no more Middle Eastern wars. And so there was big pushback. You heard it from people like Steve Bannon, and you heard it from also Tucker Carlson, who criticized, you know, why are we going to attack? Why did we, are we going to attack on the 22nd of June? Why do we attack Iran? You know, what are we doing? What is America doing? What is it our interest to bomb Iran at that time?
No.
And I think it's very serious for them because, you know, the in both houses, Trump, the Trump coalition, if you like, of these, if you like, Israeli firsters, and if you like, the MAGA, there's only a majority of about three, correct me if I'm wrong, in both houses in the United States Congress and the Senate. And a small switch by the MAGA away from them. Mm-hmm. And incidentally, he's hemorrhaging a certain amount of support amongst young, young people, many of whom came from the Democratic side of the House, who were attracted by his language about peace.
Yeah.
I'm a man of peace, not of war. And now the polls are suggesting some of those are beginning to filter away. So this is an existential problem facing Trump at the moment, because to lose the midterms can open a can of worms that can open investigations, impeachment, all sorts of things that he doesn't want. So I guess he's trying to balance the two things, the big donors, the Israeli firsters, the deep state, who has, if you like, a whole architecture of priorities, of security priorities, that are never really exposed to the public, but have been there and stayed deep within the system, and they won't allow them really to be compromised in any way.
You know, I think as I'm listening to you, I'm doing the math in my head. I think he's losing MAGA, and I think you alluded to that, and I think he's going to have big problems with the MAGA vote in the future. The Zionists, there's not enough of them to keep him in the White House. The young...
They have the money. They have, you know, big donors. These are the ultra-rich.
But what does that say? But what does that say, Alistair? What does that say? I mean, the same thing as in the UK and in Germany and in France and in... These governments, God bless them, do not give a crap about their people. It seems like all their policies... I heard the other day Starmer say something about, well, if we have to go into Iran and the people of... These aren't his words, they're mine, but it was something like it. He said something about that the people of Great Britain have to suck it up because, you know, they might have to pay a little more here and there because we have to come up with, you know, whatever infrastructure for Iran, then so be it. Really, dude? I mean, it was like... It seems...
Although, you say, what does it mean? It means, really, you know, this is the reality. Is Congress is largely bought. I mean, I'm sorry to say that, but there are a few genuine members of Congress that are not. But money plays, you know, it's very expensive to go into primary elections in America. Millions are needed. You've got to get it from somewhere. And so you make compromises and you get donations. But largely, Congress is bought, and that's a fact, and a lot of the Senate is. And what is most disturbing, and what I think most of the MAGA was hoping was going to change, was that, in the sense, they are used to it, and they like the corruption. They like the sexual structure of endless fiscal bills, big, beautiful bills, of which they're going to get somewhere or other, some sort of cutback, either in their constituency or in contributions to their next election. There's no real pressure to stop it. In fact, you know, the Trump has been trying to wane them off it. But it seems that, you know, fiscal excess has won the day. Look at the big, beautiful bill. It's going to add $3 to $4 trillion to the deficit.
Another broken promise.
It can't be controlled.
Well, and, you know, you make a great point. It's legal in the United States to bribe politicians. It's perfectly, perfectly legal. So says Citizens United, a ruling that came down from the Supreme Court. I mean, Did we ever think we'd get to a point where it was legal to bribe politicians, and as a result of that, the people who bribe them get whatever the hell they want? Is it the same way? I mean, you work for MI6. You're a big part of the history of the UK. Are they bought and sold there the same, politicians?
Yes, they are. Not quite in the same way. It's different there, but yes, of course, people expect to prosper and to move from one job to another. You know, once you're accepted into the inner circle, if you like, then it's a magic carpet. You know, whatever you do, providing you don't go against the narrative, providing you don't challenge, if you like, the set narrative, you'll move up, you'll get a job, and you'll end up as, if you like, the head of some college at Oxford or at Cambridge and have a pleasant retirement, or you go on to some industrial giant who give you a big salary for so-called consultancy or something like that. So it's similar, but it's not quite like you have in the United States, where big donors give directly and also directly give it to their opponents in order to undermine anyone that isn't supporting the cause of Israel in Congress.
You know, I was going to ask you about Israel, because I know Israel's like a giant web, a spider web that literally controls the United States and everything they do. I mean, it's become so obvious recently that it's almost disgusting. I'm wondering if they have the same kind of control in the UK.
More so. Yes, more so. Not in the same way, but yes. Influence there. I think, I can't remember the exact statistics, but I think nearly all the last cabinet were members of Friends of Israel, which is a lobby group. Not quite the same as AIPAC, but very similar. Nearly all of them. They nearly all go on these trips, sponsored trips, of course, to Israel. And the system in the UK for repressing any dissent is pretty draconian. I mean, now, you know, for the people that have been proscribed in Palestine, I mean, they're being sent to prison with the prospect of long sentences for supporting this Palestinian action group. So it's very, the narrative control in Europe is actually worse than it was. I was going to say during the Obama period, but, you know, it's changed since, Twitter was bought by Elon Musk. There has been a change in the United States, a loosening up, and things have moved on to different platforms. So it's different. But in Europe, it is a single united narrative that comes out of Brussels and is enforced ruthlessly. If you contest it or a party contests it, then you, as you see, in time after time, the leader of that party will be sent to prison on some pretext or some court case that they have somehow mismanaged funds, or in Romania or in Moldova. And so there is actually less political room in Europe, because some time ago, all the bridges out of the existing setup, which is that the centrist party must always prevail, any exit from that, all the bridges to a different political order have been broken, have been deliberately burnt down. We've burnt our bridges to the future. So we're stuck, if you like, in this network of, you know, the Brussels World Economic Forum framework. And there's no parties that can get out. You've seen them trying to get out, and they get pushed back, or they get fined, or they get some other punishment visited upon them. It's quite difficult.
Do you agree with my introduction that I did a little while ago? I don't know if you had a chance to hear it, but But what I was saying was that they seems like the diplomats and the politicians and the people that rule these Western countries are getting dumber. Like, they're clueless. Like, it's okay to choose. If you want to choose between Ukraine and Russia and you choose Ukraine, well, that's fine. Or you choose Russia, that's fine. But at least understand the basic facts of the conflict. Get some kind of historical analysis. These guys know nothing. I mean, between Merz and Starmer and Trump and Rubio, what the hell?
Well, that's why they were put there. This was what they were put in the job to do. They're not put in the job to think. They're put in the job to exercise, the job that they're given. And I think you're wrong in the sense that you're just saying that they are completely stupid. They're very stupid. But the most thing is that they're frightened and they're desperate. And they're desperate that with Ukraine is a failing war, which all the sense is that that's exactly where it's going and probably sooner than we expect. Mm. But all of that is, of course, going to have a dramatic effect. Europe is already in economic doldrums. It is already suffering austerity. It's going to get much, much worse. I mean, people, it's not just, if you like, the bottom 30% of society that can't, make a living, it's eating into the middle classes, even the upper middle classes, and everyone is at their wit's end, but you can't change the government. You can't. How do you throw out von der Leyen? You can't. Yeah. There's no mechanism for doing these things.
She's not elected.
So she just stays on, and she controls much of European policy, and you can say something, but that's the extent of it. Nothing else will change.
You know, that seems to be, and maybe we can close on this, but that seems to be the problem with this era we're living in now, especially in Western countries. I mean, it used to be, Alistair, where there was at least a sense that the people's needs and concerns and thoughts and ideologies were at least being considered. It seems like now everything is done despite what the people want or think. I see that in the UK with the wars and the people whose inflation has gone up and their wages continue to go down and more immigrants pour into their communities from needless wars that their governments engage in. I see it in the United States where they promise we're going to be told what happened with Epstein, and then it's like, no, sorry, we're closing the file. You're just a child. You don't deserve to know. Shut up and go to your room. This is kind of like the attitude that's taking place around the West. And, at some point, that ship's not going to sail.
Yeah, what it is not only are they completely disconnected. I worked in Brussels, completely disconnected from the ground, but it's also because they know that the ground despises them, holds them in contempt, and they know that the elites know that they hold them in contempt. And so, they don't go near them or they don't try and understand them. They just try and, impose the narrative, message control, and they also want to double down on, enforcement. No protest, no criticism, anything of that sort. They are going to double down until they are removed. It will come at a certain point. These leaders like Starmer, Merz, and Macron will go. There's no doubt about it. How and in what way, we don't, no one knows, of course. But the European situation is a deep crisis. Because you don't see it in terms of the streets and things like that, it's not because there isn't a crisis. It's because of the complete control and the enforcement that takes place, often increasingly violent policing of protests in Europe. But the system is chronically unstable. At the edge. And the elites know it, and they've got no alternative. So they invent this sort of Russia threat, because this is the only thing that is the sort of pole around which people can be gathered and frightened into doing this, to take it away from the problems that they have, where people really don't have. They are really struggling to make a living, make ends meet, and are deeply critical of that policy, Ukraine policy.
Yeah.
They don't want to go to war with Iran. They don't want to have all of these things. But this is where it is. And so the only thing they can do is shout war. We must prepare for war. Of course, there's another aspect to this preparation for war, which is, as usual, money. Because what they want to do is to raise large sums of money by giant debts and bonds, and this, they hope, will liquefy their banking system, which is also in difficulties. They need this money to come in to keep NATO afloat with conferences and with jaunts and things like this, and they need the money coming in also for these projects. And if it's for building tanks, it's, you know, last year it was all about green projects. Now it's all about tanks. I mean, but the main thing is the money flow has to come into the system to keep it properly liquefied and people on getting what they need.
And the people don't get it, but the big guys do. And that's the problem with this kind of system. Boy, it is such... It's such a delight having a conversation with you because, you know, a lot of people can say these things and a lot of people do say these things and a lot of people understand it and are able to address it. But you have experienced it. There are few things that you have not done in your life that have put you right in the nerve center of how these things happen, how these decisions were made, you know, how the sausage is made, as some would like to say. So... that's why it's so great to have a conversation with you. Thank you so much for taking us through this. I look forward to talking to you again.
My pleasure. My pleasure. Thank you very much.
Wow. And that's our news. I want to thank you for being with us. And remember to follow us on my podcast. If you haven't seen it, it's called Journalistically Speaking. We also call it J-Speak. I still believe in journalism. I still believe that truth is the answer. You can chat with me, by the way, on X or Twitter at Rick Sanchez TV. And that's it for us here at The Sanchez Effect. We'll be looking for you next time.